to Bremer. Klinsmann! Great save, Shilton! Terrific goalkeeping on the line. Defies Jürgen Klinsmann.
Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the fabulously fit voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Well, hello there, Matthew.
I say this, Richard, because you are indeed quite fit at the moment, arguably fitter than you have ever been, fitter perhaps than you were as a player many, many moons ago. During this period of lockdown, you've been inspiring goalkeepers, young and old, to maintain their goalkeeping fitness with these bespoke at-home workouts that you've been producing on Instagram Live. Very impressive, I must say too.
Indeed. Look, shameless plug to start the show today. But yes, we have put a program together. So for those who don't know, we have a lot of goalkeeper schools worldwide. Of course, as soon as the pandemic hit, everything stopped. So we then moved everything online. And it's thankfully been very successful. So we do online coaching every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, which I do personally. Half-hour sessions, which is lots of goalkeeping movements, includes a lot of plyometric work, fast feet, a lot of flexibility work, agility work. It's been really good fun, actually. We've got a really good group of young goalkeepers aged sort of 8 to 16. I put them through their paces. I'll tell you what, it's very, very difficult.
Yep, it is indeed. I've not done one yet, although I have to say I've observed over Instagram, which is actually a little bit weird when you think about it, but we're going to swiftly brush right past that one because it's certainly quite intense. I have to say, you get quite the bead on, mate. Quite hot and bothered, quite sweaty.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I think, obviously, with everything that's going on at the moment and the likes of Joe Wicks, who is doing as well as he is and putting on fantastic training for young people, I just thought there's got to be something that can be goalkeeper related. So I did a DVD, made a DVD years ago, a goalkeeper workout DVD, which, I'll be honest, wasn't overly successful. However,
you were ahead of the curve, my friend. You were ahead of the curve.
There you go, Matthew. You see, it kind of gave me the inspiration to do this in that rather than do a Joe Wicks workout, why not do something that can aid your game? So as and when we do get back on the field, which hopefully won't be too much longer, you will be that much fitter, sharper, stronger and ready to go back. It's interesting. It kind of mirrors to an extent what a lot of the pros are doing now. So, you know, a lot of the lads I'm speaking to, obviously they can't do a lot of handling work unless they've been lucky enough to be given a ball firing machine and they can get their daughter or wife or whatever to feed them footballs. But most, they're not able to do the handling work. So what they're doing is just loads of power work, loads of fast feet. You know, rather than go on long runs, which don't necessarily benefit a goalkeeper, can you do more of a hit session, which again, is going to get you in the right place so that when you do go back, it's more a case of getting your handling sharp as opposed to having to work on all your different power exercises that you can do during this time. So no, it has been a lot of fun. It's been great personally as well, because as you mentioned, I'm feeling as fit and strong as I have for many, many years, Matthew.
There have been rumours as well, mate, that you have been referred to as the Joe Wicks of goalkeeping. Can you confirm or deny such rumours?
Yeah, it is true, Matthew. I was first called that a couple of weeks ago by myself, as it goes. So yes, I am the self-proclaimed Joe Wicks of goalkeeping.
Nice, Richard. Nice. Okay, well, that is you. goalkeepersunion.net/workout for anyone wishing to get involved. The first week is free. That's right. And then £12 per week thereafter, should you wish to join Rich from afar in the comfort of his very own home. And what a lovely home it is too. And speaking of lovely people and curly-haired beauts, such as Joe Wicks, who you just mentioned there, we're going to leap over now to another kind of curly-haired beaut in Peter Shilton. More to the point, Peter Shilton at Italia 90.
Useful ball, and it's running loose. They've got a man over. Shilton makes an excellent block and denies Omambik, and an indication of what the Africans are capable of doing.
Okay, let's get into this. He is England's record male cap holder. He racked up a ridiculous 1,387, it sounds bonkers when you actually say that word, doesn't it, games over the course of his competitive career. He bagged a whole host of trophies and awards during that time too. Peter Shilton is undoubtedly a goalkeeping great, yet like many before him and many after him, he is a goalkeeping great still singled out for a few select high profile errors, or perhaps we should say perceived high-profile errors he made, notably for his country, not so much for his club. So it's worth mentioning that too. Quick note, this is a podcast focusing not on the career of Peter Shilton as a whole, but instead a glance over his selection and subsequent performances at the World Cup in Italy, Italia 90. For many of our generation, Rich, this was a coming-of-age World Cup, the first World Cup we can remember watching, and thus the first time we can really recall seeing Peter Shilton play. Incidentally, it came at the tail end of his career, didn't it? He was 40 years old at the time. He obviously continued to play thereafter, but this was for, like I say, a lot of our generation, our first proper look at Shilts. Now, I vividly recall thinking, oh, he's a bit old. He's a bit cumbersome. He's a bit slow. But I was only 7 years old at the time. What did I know? I've obviously learned a lot since then, and you've taught me a lot about goalkeeping too. Now, the reason behind us choosing to do this is because naturally right now there's a whole chunk of nostalgic football viewing on TV. The BBC have been showing a World Cup rewind at weekends, with the weekend just gone at the time of this recording being England's quarterfinal and semi-final with Cameroon and West Germany in 1990, respectively. Now, it occurred to me at the time from looking at Twitter as I was watching just how vitriolic some of the fans still are towards Peter Shilton. Naturally, 86 and Maradona comes into the equation, but so too does the argument about that penalty shootout with West Germany and the opening goal from Andy Bremer, which, let's not ignore the fact, it did look awful. Wild deflection of Paul Parker, Peter Shilton scrambling back into his goal. It did not look good. But was it all down? Was it all down, Rich, to Peter Shilton? I'm not entirely convinced. And needless to say, neither are you. We're going to get into all of that and a few other points from this World Cup, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly that. Look, I think in terms of an achievement from, well, from his point of view, to be playing at 40 years old in the World Cup in the way he did and still performing at such a high level, I think is huge. Now, we're obviously going to go into detail on a few of the goals conceded, saves made, because I disagree. Looking back, and I've heard the analysis, I've heard a lot of the comments, and I think I'm likely to go against the grain, as I often do. But I'd like to go into a bit of detail on the key points that have been discussed about Peter Shilton in regards to 1990. Because, yeah, I think there's, you know, as is always the way, people jump on a bandwagon. And I've heard a lot of the stuff and a lot of the ways in which he's been referred to when it comes to that World Cup, the penalty shootout in particular, the goal that he conceded against Germany in that game. And of course, he didn't have such a good day, it's fair to say, the game against Italy, the mistake he made. But I'd love to go into a bit of detail on each of these and actually give a non-biased analysis and give a bit of detail on each goal and give my thoughts. So that's the point of today's pod.
It is indeed, Richard. Fret not to those thinking we're going to chart the entire World Cup campaign, by the way. We're not going to do that. We're pretty much focusing on the semi-final and his final ever competitive England game in that third place playoff. He did play another benefit game a few months later, but we'll save that for a rainy day. So let's quickly touch on, we'll go with the group stages first, and then we'll quickly touch on Cameroon and West Germany thereafter. Now, the group stages, two clean sheets against the Netherlands and Egypt. The second one made him a record breaker for clean sheets at World Cup finals with 9. He then extended that by another to make it 10, thanks to the win over Belgium in the first knockout phase. It took 16 years for another man to equal that record, which was Fabian Barthez in 2006. And the pair remain today as those record holders. So that's one thing. We're going to throw a few of these in here and there in defense of Shilts as we go along. But that first group game with Ireland, it was one apiece. We had a couple of people reference on Twitter. Now, thanks to all those who got involved, by the way, with the conversation over the weekend. Great to hear your thoughts. Always appreciate the interaction. But there was a suggestion that Shilton was at fault for Ireland's equaliser from Kevin Sheedy. Now, I'm not having that. Steve McMahon gave the ball away on the edge of the area. And Sheedy, known to have a very decent left foot, drilled a very decent shot into the bottom corner across Shilton. Not an error.
No, not for me. Absolutely not. And the reason why, and again, we'd like to break it down and go into a bit of detail. As you mentioned, it was a mistake by the defender. The ball is struck, and the way in which it's struck, it's not arcing away from Peter Shilton. If anything, there's a slight bit of dip. If anything, it's coming slightly back in towards the goal. Now, the only thing you can touch on is Peter Shilton's positioning. But what I'll say is that the game has changed. And I think where we were back then, goalkeepers were a bit more advanced than they are now, I would say. And in fact, it was interesting. We went into detail for those that have been listening to the Insta Lives that I've been doing with all the coaches. We spoke to Jimmy Walker about this in detail, Martin Margotson as well, in terms of the optimum position that a goalkeeper can take. And you very rarely now see a goalkeeper rush out in the way that they did back then. Of course, Peter Shilton did make a very good save against Cameroon. And that was a technique back then that was very much the way to go, where you'd rush out in a different way in which you would now. Now, this particular goal, for me, his positioning's good. I think he gets a good dive away. Is he as athletic and agile as maybe he once was? Well, no, but he's 40-odd years old. Maybe when he's 30, 25, he might be a little bit more agile, a little bit more athletic. But I think even if he is more athletic, I still don't think he saves this ball, going back to my initial point, because of the way in which it's struck. It's struck almost without spin. It's got a bit of dip. It's coming back in towards him, and it is right in the corner. It's struck so fiercely. So to say it's an error, I think we've got to be very, very careful if we say this is an error, because then we're going to be looking at so many things and saying they're errors.
Yes, England progressing eventually from that group, one of the worst groups ever in the history of the World Cup, by the way. I think, in fact, the entire tournament, on reflection, in terms of footballing quality, wasn't the best. I know that narrative has been told quite a bit since, when everybody's looked back at the highlights and thought, do you know what, it wasn't really that good. I think it's just the romance of it, kicking off the 90s, this period of football. A whole community of us are utterly obsessed with the Italian backdrop of it all. Nessun Dorma, Pavarotti, Gazza's tears, which gave us this, I know, this skewed perception of a pretty dull tournament, really, and an absolute dross of a final between West Germany and Argentina as well. But let's get on to the quarterfinal with Cameroon. Now, Shilton made a decent one-on-one stop in that one from Francois Oman Bailly. That was the guy who scored that famous goal in the opening clash of the tournament with then holders Argentina. And that save from Shilton was actually highlighted by Bob Wilson, the former Arsenal goalkeeper Bob Wilson, in the TV coverage at the time. The beauty of these reruns is that not only are they showing the game, they're actually showing all the punditry pre-game, half-time interval as well, and post-match as well. Now, you've got Terry Venables and Jimmy Hill doing whatever it is that they do, used to argue all the time. But this was back in the days when Bob Wilson used to present live games and highlights. And his point being that those who question Shilton's inclusion might have had a different view when seeing that save from Oman Bailly. Good save it was. I know, Rich, you weren't entirely convinced that it was as good as I'm suggesting it was, but still, a one-on-one, so a decent stop. We're going to move on straight now to West Germany. Now, let's get on to the goal. Andy Bremer free kick, a wild and bizarre deflection of Paul Parker, like we've said. Shilton's backpedalling. He can't keep it out. What's your take?
First and foremost, I don't think it's his fault, and I'll explain why. So, I've looked at this in such detail. I've gone over it again and again. First and foremost, he's lined his wall up correctly. The wall's well placed. His positioning is perfect. What happens? The ball is played to the side. When it's played, you see that Shilton advances just a couple of yards. Now, for me, that is the correct decision. The reason he's done that is that at the moment that the ball is struck from the floor. Now, that's important because ordinarily, 99.9 times out of 100, that does not beat him over his head. There's no way in which the player can strike that and lob Shilton from that particular position. So I think his positioning spot on. I think he's lined his wall up. He's got his 2 yards to narrow the angle you talk about. We won't go into detail on that at the moment. We did this with Jimmy Walker actually on the Insta Live, but won't go into detail on that. I think his positioning is spot on. Now, what happens is such a freak incident that I think we've very rarely, if ever, seen it happen since then. You know, we talk about goals. There's a lot of familiar goals, I'd say, that you see, but I haven't seen this one. It is bad defending, first and foremost, but for the ball to loop in the way that it does with topspin at pace and dip just under the bar, it is genuinely a one in a million thing to happen. So first and foremost, it's a very unfamiliar situation. The only slight bit of analysis and the slight change that you could argue that Shilton may well have done was the way in which he backpedaled. Now, in his defense, he won't have faced a shot like this before. So it's brand new territory. And he's then had to think instantly, how do I get back to that ball? The only slight criticism I'll give is the fact that he backpedals facing backwards effectively. Now, the only slight change he could have made, if it had gone sideways, and De Gea does this well. We've seen De Gea do this where you almost turn on your side, you then go back on your side. So you jockey backwards. And what it allows you to do is spring off. Because if you imagine, for instance, and the similarity you'll have is on a cross. If you're going to a cross at the back post, you're told not to backpedal because you've got no balance, no real power. You can't jump off and make the catch. Whereas if you go back sideways for the cross, you can then spring off that lower foot and then you can either palm it away with your top hand or you make an extravagant catch on the cross. It's similar to that. So had he gone back on his side, maybe, just maybe, like a De Gea, he may well have been able to explode up, get a top hand, and flick it over the bar. But to say it's a mistake, you know, in such a random situation like that, no, absolutely not for me. It's a one in a million. I think he does everything right. The one small tweak he might have made, had he saved it, it would have been a world-class save. It's as simple as that.
Wow. Okay. Well, I have to say, I mean, you mentioned the fact that we were young at the time. I was also just 7 years old. It was the first World Cup that our generation can really remember, Italia 90. And 30 years on, Rich, I have to say, you are the first person I've ever heard say that Peter Shilton was not at fault for that goal.
There you go. I'll be interested to hear what everyone else thinks, by all means. I know a few have already had their say on Twitter, but do you get on Twitter and let us know your thoughts? I mean, the one thing I will just say on that is that goalkeeping has changed since. We spoke to Jimmy Walker on Instagram the other day, and he spoke about from shots from that far out, he would recommend effectively being 1 yard off your line as opposed to three. Now, of course, if that were the case, Peter Shilton makes a save. But this is where I think goalkeeping's changed. I think that back then, you were told to be 4, 5, 6 yards out. He did it against Ireland. He set 5 yards out because that's what we were coached. I was coached that when I was younger. So I think we have to judge it based on what goalkeeping was back then. I think he ticks every box other than the way in which he moves back towards the ball. He does backpedal in a slightly, I say, awkward way and isn't able to spring. But then to say it's an error because of that, I just don't agree with.
Okay, moving on to penalties. Before we get there, actually, a very good save from Shilton that will drop in early into extra time. The old adage, isn't it, of recognising a good goalkeeper when he's not had much to do all game, but produces the goods when called upon. That came into effect there. It was a Jürgen Klinsmann header early in to extra time, and Shilton beat it clear. Very strong hands. Yes, it could have potentially been a bit further either side of him. It was close to Shilton, but needless to say, a good save nonetheless. And then we move on to penalties. Now, Shilton has been much maligned for his now infamous stance on these penalties. He's admitted himself that he chose to react to each penalty as it was taken rather than gamble and guess the right way. Great if it comes off, but obviously not so much if it doesn't. And on this occasion, it didn't. Before I come to you, Rich, I know you're itching to do the analysis of these penalties. There is another layer to this story as well, and that didn't come out until a fair few years after the event, and that being that Gary Lineker was partly responsible for initiating the idea of not moving until the penalty was taken. The story goes that Lineker and Shilton roomed with each other, and upon seeing footage of games, they were obviously watching various games in their rooms as the tournament was progressing. They'd noticed that a lot of the penalties taken at the tournament were struck with power, but fairly close to the keeper. Lineker himself, of course, doing just that with the second of his penalties in that previous win over Cameroon. So as a pair, they decided, which is incredible really to think that these two footballers in their room were deciding what to do for a World Cup semi-final. They decided that Shilton, should the game go to West Germany to a penalty shootout, that would be the route that he took. Now, like I say, it's incredible to think that they could make a decision themselves, especially when you look back to 2018 and Jordan Pickford with the water bottle and that in-depth interaction between goalkeeper and goalkeeper coach in him and Martin Margotson. It just wasn't the way then. But yeah, Rich, reacting to the penalties rather than anticipating the penalties was the mentality for Shilton in that shootout.
It is interesting, actually. I didn't know that bit of information. And that actually then does make a lot of sense because, look, you consider it, you're stepping up, Italia 90, the nerves that you would have, well, the one thing you don't want to do is miss the target, i.e. Chris Waddle. That's the one thing you don't want to do. You want to hit the target elite. Very worst case, make the goalkeeper make a save. So then with that kind of mindset, it actually makes a lot of sense as a goalkeeper. If you back yourself to move quickly and go at the last minute, well, if it's not going to go right in the corner, you've got a chance. But this is where we need to give credit to the Germans because actually, look, he only faced four penalties, first and foremost. Obviously, he didn't have to face the fifth one because England missed their two. So he only faced four penalties. Out of those four, I'm not having that anybody saves three of them, certainly. I think there's three, number one, three and four. I think you've got absolutely no chance. I don't care if it is David De Gea, Alisson, Edison in goal. They're all goals, as far as I'm concerned. The only one that's savable out of those penalties is the second one. And I think that's where it cost him that he didn't go early. But look, had he gone early and gone the right way, he probably saves it. Had he gone early and gone the other way, of course, he doesn't anyway. So to then again, we always look for a scapegoat. I just think that's the way of probably, I don't know if it's just English, England, or if it's other countries too, but we always look for a scapegoat. If we're going to blame him for that one penalty and for, you know, a very slight tweak he could have done to his technique in terms of the goal, again, I'm just not having it. I think there's one penalty in four that he might be able to do slightly better with, but that's it. None of the others, certainly none of the others, as far as I'm concerned.
You see, I think I disagree with you there, mate. I think I disagree with the penalty you're saying he had a chance with. I actually think that was one of, say, two he had absolutely no chance with, because the sheer power and the ferocity on the shot from Lothar Matthäus was such that, yes, it was the closest of the 4-2 Shilton, but it was hit so hard that it was almost in the back of the net before he's had a chance to react. A little bit like, and I don't know, I reckon you might disagree with me on this one as well, a bit like Beck's, David Beckham in his redemption penalty against Argentina in 2002. Keeper at the time was Cavallero, wasn't it? Pablo Cavallero. I remember thinking he knew Beck's was going to go down the middle. He therefore didn't dive, but such was the power on the penalty that he wasn't able to react to it quickly enough. I don't know. I don't know what you think about that one. But for me, Bremer, first pen, yep, good pen. Absolutely no chance. Matthäus, no chance. Karl-Heinz Riedler with the third. Great penalty. Top bins, no chance again. The one I thought maybe he could have done better with was the fourth decisive penalty from Olaf Thurn. Now, not struck with as much power as Matthäus and not too far over in the corner. It would have also been a massive save with the Stuart Pearce effort being saved just moments before.
So, firstly, I think Beckham penalty savable. I think that the Lineker penalty in that particular game as well, by the way, was savable. I think the Lothar Matthäus penalty, savable. Look, I think any goalkeeper that's played against... I'll tell you a great example is Dyer for England, who you know, got the obviously the winning penalty in that penalty shootout, the famous penalty shootout a couple of years ago. Again, savable. It wasn't a great penalty, but this is where we remember it. If you end up scoring, you're the hero. Yet you can hit a pretty poor penalty, and if it's then saved, of course, you know, we're blaming the taker and it's dreadful and whatever. But if it's scored, we forget all about it, and it's then, oh, cool, head under pressure. Do you know what? Gareth Southgate missed that penalty. What if the goalie had dived the other way? Are we then talking about Gareth Southgate steps up, cool under pressure, slots it in the corner? But this is it. It's kind of, it's all dependent on the outcome. And I just think, unfortunately for Peter Shilton, I think if he'd have dived early, my point with that second one is if he goes early, the power's irrelevant. Beckham's penalty. If the goalie goes early and goes the right way, pretty simple save. Dyer, the keeper, should save that penalty. He'd be so disappointed with that, as far as I'm concerned. So this is it where, look, I know what you're saying. There's okay, the fourth one, I don't think so. I think it's far enough in the corner that I think, you know, unless you go really, really early and you're incredibly explosive, then maybe you make the save. But I think for me, the one, and I think a lot of goalkeepers that have faced that type of penalty, they'll understand that it doesn't matter how hard it's hit. If you've gone early and it's not in the corner, then it hits you and you get that lovely moment where you haven't necessarily reacted. I had the two that I saved against Southampton in that game. People that, not that anyone's going to remember these, but there was a great example there where the two that I saved in the game, and that was that, where I think it was Sermons hit it. I'm not even reacting. It's just hit me, cannoned off me, probably similar to the Beckham penalty, cannoned off me and gone 50 yards down the field. Everyone talks about it being a great save. To an extent, there's luck, but then also to an extent, I've read it and thankfully got myself in the way, which I think he could have done. That's the only one he could have done on the second one.
Okay, that's fair enough. And hey, it's good that we can agree to disagree. That'd be the purpose of this podcast, really. Just one last note. I don't want to have the final word here. That's not what this is about. But the reasoning behind my argument for that penalty is just because he does take a little jink to the opposite side, his right, as Tone approaches. Tone hits it to his left, at which point he then dives. I do think if he'd maintained his stance and not done the jink, there's a chance he could have been closer to it. But listen, that is what it is. Let's also not forget, actually, a lot of the stick that Shilton gets and other goalkeepers receive for not saving penalties at Italia 90 was down to the fact that they weren't allowed to move on their line at the time. I'm pretty sure the rules were then quite strict about goalkeepers not only remaining rooted on the goal line, but also not being allowed to move along it. So the chances were naturally weighted in huge favour to the attacker. As it went, Shilton did jink right and didn't keep out that fourth penalty, and we all know what happened next, don't we? But what do you think, listeners? Thoughts on all the above on Richard's staunch defence of Peter Shilton and his inclusion by Sir Bobby Robson at the tournament? Get in touch at GK Union on Twitter via email hello@goalkeepersunion.net.
Now it's Matthäus, who's their number one penalty man, and that's why. I should think Shilton hardly saw that. And of all the penalty shootouts we've had and the penalties taken, I doubt if one's been hit harder than this.
Myth-busting time next, Richard. It's almost common knowledge now, isn't it? But there are a select few who still buy into the notion that Dave Besant could have been England's saviour at Italia 90. He gained a bit of a penalty-saving reputation having kept out John Aldridge a couple of years earlier in the FA Cup final for Wimbledon. And many subscribe to the idea, many years after the event, that is, that had Besant been brought on for Shilton at the end of extra time, he'd have fared better and seen England through to the final. Dave Besant could have been the saviour of England. The fact of the matter is that he couldn't, because it wasn't possible for Besant to be brought on, and that is because he was not in the match day squad. Yes, he was in the full squad, having been drafted in due to David Seaman's injury, but I think Italia 90, I could be wrong with this, but I think Italia 90 was the last World Cup where you could only name five subs. Chris Woods, being the number two, was the sub goalkeeper, and therefore he was the only option available to Bobby Robson. Now, that aside, you'd have to imagine if it was possible that Besant could have come on. You'd also have to consider the psychological effect, right, that such a change could have made as well. Bear in mind, this type of tactic hadn't really been adopted before, at least not on such a big stage from memory. I know it's more common now, Jasper Cillessen and Tim Krul being the high-profile go-to example in recent years. But imagine Peter Shilton, the outright number one and 40-year-old custodian, the goalkeeper who had been a mainstay in goal for the national side for a number of years with very little competition, and a goalkeeper who, at the age of 39, had a year earlier been shortlisted, and this is incredible, for the Ballon d'Or, 39 years old. People tend to forget that as well. Just imagine him being hauled off in front of millions in an unprecedented move by his national manager. Not only that, the number two is then overlooked as well. Imagine England get through to the final. You are then faced with your top two goalkeepers thinking, all right, we're not good enough to win you a penalty shootout, but now you want us to go and win you a World Cup. The mindset, the mentality, the relationship between goalkeeper, top two goalkeepers and manager would have been in disarray. Now, I know various stories have come out since about the fact it was possibly considered, but I just think you would have been hugely ill-advised at the time. You look at Jim Leighton being dropped in the FA Cup final just a few weeks earlier for Manchester United, and then being under intense scrutiny for Scotland and making what you could say was the error for Brazil to knock them out of the tournament in a couple of games before England played West Germany. By making such a call, you'd have had a right mess on your hands.
You would. And look, I've got my thoughts on this. This is, yeah, someone who I was reasonably good and successful, I suppose, when it came to facing penalties. But no, I just think there's, you know, even the example we saw with Holland, I don't agree with it. And I know people are going to say, well, it worked. You know, Krul came on and did what he did. And Cillessen, they cuddled at the end and blah, blah, blah. I'm not having it. I'm just not. I just think that when it comes to facing penalties, you know, look, some have got better records than others, but I think most goalkeepers, they put a little bit of effort into saving penalties and understanding the mindset, the games that go on when it comes to penalties. Personally, I think that if you're not a goalkeeper that thrives in a penalty shootout, then I'd question you to an extent, because you have got nothing to lose. It is your opportunity to be a hero. If you're Peter Shilton, 1,000%, you want to be involved in that scenario. You know, people often say, it's often people that don't know goalkeeping that will say, and I'm sure every goalkeeper listening to this had it, where someone, you'll mention that you're a goalkeeper to someone, and they'll be, oh, it must be so scary when you've got a penalty shootout. And we all say the same thing, which is, no, that's the bit I love the most. So for a manager to replace a goalkeeper for what is effectively your chance to shine, your chance for all the hard work you've managed to graft out, a 0-0 in a semi-final. I know it was 1-1 this game, but you know what I'm saying. A 0-0, and this is your chance then to be the ultimate hero. Like Jordan Pickford, who, for that save that he's made, I mean, how much publicity, how much fame, how much notoriety has he got for that one save, that one penalty save that he made? Look, that's your opportunity. So I don't agree with it. I think there are goalkeepers that are slightly better than others when it comes to penalties. But I would argue, if you're a goalkeeper that doesn't think you're particularly good at penalties, well, then become good. And I mean that in the most sincere way, which is understand how it works. Understand the little intricacies when you see a taker stepping up and you can be that little bit better. You can start to read them a bit. Watch penalties. Watch thousands of penalties and see if you can start to see patterns as to how they run up. Are they angled? Have they got a straight run up? How are they placing the ball? Is the Nike sign pointing a certain way? Where's the standing foot? Can you read their hips as they're getting that little bit closer to the ball? What's your movement? Are you doing what Peter Shilton did, by the way? We didn't even touch on this. He's not in the centre of his goal. He's slightly off centre. Now, why is he doing that? Again, mind games. He's trying to get an edge. He's jinked one way to go the other way. All these little things that you can do, there's thousands of little things. Find your technique, find your strategy, and just become good. Look, it's these key moments that ultimately we're always going to go back. If it didn't go our way, I think, what if? You know, Frank Lampard, the ball goes a few yards over the line, it's not given. What if? And that's football. Again, it's the beauty of it that we can have these conversations, and ultimately, we're never going to know. But you're right. I think that if we went back in time now, would Bobby Robson do anything different? No, of course he wouldn't. Peter Shilton would be in goal for those penalties. And actually, his strategy waiting for the players, seeing where they went. On another day, that works, but it didn't on this day.
It's funny because that's actually one that gets a lot of stick, the waiting. But you actually agree with that. You think that's a sensible decision.
Would I do it? No, I wouldn't. But do I understand why? Well, yeah. Do you know what? You look at the saves that I made, a lot of the penalty saves I made in the JPT, was it 7 that season or whatever it was? Well, no offence to the JPT, it's not the World Cup. So are the players feeling the same kind of pressure when they're stepping up? Probably not. So are they going to look to hit the corners more than maybe they would in the World Cup where they're a bit more nervous? So I think I had to do what I did in those games, for instance, and get myself right into the corners to make the saves. Whereas in the World Cup, I get the thinking. Look, if they're going to be nervous, are they going to try and tuck it right in the corner? Are they going to be more concerned about hitting the target? So I do get the strategy. Again, I wouldn't necessarily do it myself because that's never been my strategy, but I do understand it. And on another day, do you know what, if they were poor penalties and Shilton goes and saves 3 of them, we're talking about him like he is an absolute hero, an absolute genius of thinking about it this way. But again, unfortunately, this is where you have to give credit to the Germans. On the whole, the penalties they took were very, very good.
It was Peter Shilton's last international. Sadly, a man who performed with distinction throughout this tournament and for the most part since his debut in 1970, was left with an embarrassed finale. His concentration wavered there for a moment. Schillaci and Baggio took full advantage and Baggio scored for Italy.
A couple more Shilton defending points before we get on to the Italy third place playoff. Now, I just want to ram these home too. This was the first penalty shootout England had ever been involved in. No one had any idea how this was going to go. If you delve into the stats, actually, leading up to the tournament, 2 of the 5 penalties Shilton faced for England prior to that shootout were either saved or missed. One hit the post. The other was saved from Andy Bremer, no less, 5 years earlier in a friendly tournament over in Mexico. The same Andy Bremer he was due to face again in this one. So going on those averages, you'd be forgiven for thinking that England were well equipped to win the shootout. Yes, he'd conceded one in the previous game from Emmanuel Koundé of Cameroon, but much like Riedler's penalty we've already discussed, it was a very well taken penalty right in the top corner. He had absolutely no chance with that one. But we're going to move on. I think we've analysed that one enough now to the Italy game and the formality of that third place playoff. Now, this is where a bit more balance comes in, doesn't it, Rich? Because there were some arguments which suggested Shilton progressively got worse during the tournament. I, for one, like I said at the top of the show, actually remember thinking that. Now, for context, he'd not conceded a single goal in qualifying. He'd also broken the clean sheet record, like we said, but he had been criticised for his performance in the penultimate friendly before the tournament with Uruguay, and that power of the more recent clearly played a part in how people perceived his performances at the tournament. The game with Italy not helping to alleviate that perception. He was certainly at fault for the opening goal from Roberto Baggio.
He was. I don't really know what he was doing. I mean, he's third and fourth played playoffs. They're always funny, aren't they? Like, it does seem that it's just got a very different feel about it. And this goal probably sums up a third and fourth place playoff, where the ball's played back to him. He doesn't pick it up instantly and obviously gets robbed in the way that he does and concedes a soft goal. So, look, he'll know himself that this was a mistake. And it probably didn't do him any favours, because then when you do make a mistake in this game, then naturally people will then look back at previous games. And it often happens. You know, we talk a lot in football about building credit. Now, I remember when I was told this when I was younger, and I didn't know if I necessarily agreed, but it does make more and more sense as a goalkeeper, in that if you're playing a game on the back of loads and loads of good games, people are looking for positives. You know, I remember when I started the season for Brentford after getting Player of the Year the previous season, it felt like everything I did, they were applauding me and cheering me because you're on such a positive note. Similarly, when I had the worst game of my life and we lost to Fulham 5-0, it felt like it took game after game after game before I built that credit back. Well, this mistake, you do just find that sometimes you make an error like this, then it's easy to almost then go back and look at the previous games and start to assign even more error to maybe situations that weren't a particularly big error, if that makes sense. So look, he'll know himself that this wasn't a particularly good play. Credit to Scalacci, does very well on the wing in fairness and get themselves in to get the goal in which they get. But it is a nothing game. But it's a shame in a way that it finished on that note, because it could have been so, so different.
Another penalty in that one as well. Incidentally, he did gamble and did dive the wrong way for Scalacci's winner. So there you go. The debate on that specific argument rumbles on. But to finish, Rich, let's also put to bed the idea that Shilton was not the right choice, full stop, as England's number one at the tournament. Like we've said, and we're going to list a few of these bullets just one more time. Outright number one at the time. In the 20 games leading up to Italia 90, he played in all but two. One was a first cap for David Seaman against Saudi Arabia. The other was an inconsequential game at the Euros in 1988, where Chris Woods played in a dead rubber because England were already out. Shilton was the record cap holder. He'd eclipsed Sir Bobby Moore the previous year. He'd conceded no goals during qualifying and a very good performance against Poland in that campaign too. You've got the Ballon d'Or nomination. He'd also been in relatively good club form. Derby didn't have the best of seasons, but they had finished fifth the season prior, in which he was a pivotal part as that last line of defence in that team. Ultimately, there were no solid challengers to his throne at the time. For Bobby Robson to have made the call would have been an incredible risk.
Yeah. No, look, you said it all there. You mentioned, 1,300 odd games. Last game was at Leyton Orient, the age of, 46 was he? 31-year career, or 47. I mean, just, that is incredible. There's so many positives. And this then comes back to, it kind of frustrates me in a way that we have this conversation the same way that we did about David Seaman, in the same way that we did about Peter Benetti. So it's just the life of a goalkeeper. When we do these, I really enjoy doing these pieces on specific players, specific legends of the game, which he very much is. But it's just interesting how many of them have a slightly negative vibe about them. And it almost feels like we're defending them for just how great they were. Whereas, you know, you talk about many outfield players. I'm sure if we ever to do one about Messi or Ronaldo at some point, for instance, there's going to be no negativity because of the position on the field. So, no, I think my closing statement about Peter Shilton, an absolute legend, incredible, incredible career, so many highs. And I love the fact that we in the goalkeeper community do remember those highs. I think it's important that we do so because, look, moving forward, goalkeeping is going to become more and more popular. There are going to be more and more kids that want to play the position. And this is where the education is so, so important.
Richard, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. We will see you next time.